Well, it's good to see a number of you here for the first time. In fact, why don't we just say a big welcome to those here for the first time? It's good to have you here. By the way, Briarcliff is a place where everyone is welcome. No one is perfect. Anything is possible. Just so that if you're here for the first time, you just know that you're welcome here. Nobody's perfect. They kind of try to act like it, but nobody is perfect. And we believe about anything as possible. So I'm glad you're here. We are going through a series right now on wholeness and primarily talking about our soul and our soul all about us. Our soul is our emotions, our mental activity, our spiritual part, encountering the body. All of that is our soul. And so how healthy are we? How whole are we? We're fallen creatures. All of us are dealing with something. We're going to focus this morning on an emotion, the emotion of depression. Many of you will understand what we're talking about. There'll be some of you who may not have a clue. But you do have some stuff that you deal with in your emotions and your mind that maybe is helpful. And we're going to dig down into two specific verses to unwrap that very, very carefully. Back in the 1980s, I had the privilege of being a pastor of a church that was in the top 1% in the nation of church growth. So we had all kinds of people come and asking us questions. How can we do that in our church? And began to do church growth conferences, and I put together one and led one. We had national speakers there, and I was doing a seminar there. In fact, we were doing it right over here in seminary. And I got about midway through, and all of a sudden, I couldn't finish. And I felt just, I didn't know, I couldn't explain how I felt. I finally sat down there in the front, and I told the people, I said, I'm not feeling well. And I could not finish. I could not finish. I had a friend that picked me up and took me home because I wasn't able to drive. It was so scary because I had no idea what was going on inside of me. I didn't know that I was suffering depression. I wasn't sad. But I had a form of depression that I could not explain. And I ended up going to counseling for a year and actually got on medication. It was a horrifying time. There was a time that I wasn't in the pulpit and did not want anyone to know what was going on. So I said, I've got a virus. If you don't know what's going on, just call it a virus. Yeah. There was a time there that I went through a period of time, instead of when I preach on Sunday, I'd always have a backup. And I'd say, you know, if I call you, hey, you got to jump in because I can't make it. I didn't know if I was going to make it or not. I did not know if I was going to be able to continue on as a pastor of a church. What would I do? If I wasn't a pastor, I'm not qualified to do anything. And I don't think I can go back to Chestnut Ridge because Charlene won't go with me. And so I felt, oh man, what am I going to do? So during that period of time, I learned a lot about depression and I learned a lot about me. I know that there is a lot of kinds of depression, so I want to just give a warning here that even though I'm talking about this, I don't understand your depression. Just because a person has been depressed, they can't say, oh, I understand that. No, you don't. So I'm not trying to say that I'm authority and I'm going to kind of go over the top of all this, but hopefully we'll dig down into the scriptures that will be helpful for you. But there is a form of depression that would be a major depression, clinically depression. I know that many of you have heard of bipolar. Some of you will be a mild kind of depression. Some depression is activated by seasons of the year. Like when we were in Canada, working with a number of churches up there, those people around in the wintertime, they would talk about the depression there. And I could understand that. I was only there a week and got depressed with the weather there. It's terrible there, you know. And they take off to go to Arizona or someplace and get recuperated and then come back. But all of those are so different. I also learned that I'm in good company with depression. There's a lot of people. And for example, in history, Winston Churchill, all these suffered depression sometime. Winston Churchill, Abraham Lincoln, Alexander the Great, Beethoven, Napoleon, John Bunyan, Buzz Aldrin, Ernest Hemingway, Robert E. Lee, Isaac Newton, Theodore Roosevelt, all of those. Great men, great leaders. Then in the church or spiritual world, people like Charles Haddon Spurgeon. His library is housed right here at the seminary. One Sunday, he stood up, 1866, in this huge tabernacle, metropolitan tabernacle, 5,000 people. It's unheard of to have a group like that. He was a great orator. And he stood up and announced to their sent shockwaves through the congregation. I'm going through a deep, deep kind of depression I hope none of you ever have to experience. And they were shocked. We're celebrating 500 years after Martin Luther. Martin Luther suffered. Sometimes he'd kind of vanish for days in darkness. And they would even hide instruments from him, afraid that he would hurt himself. And this is a great man, Martin Luther. So I found out that I'm not alone. And I hope you realize you're not alone. Even today, great celebrities, many times these celebrities, you'd think they never even know. They never even know how to spell the word depression. And yet, who was it that did the halftime show at the Super Bowl? Oh, don't act like you didn't watch it. Lady Gaga said she suffers depression. Ellen DeGeneres, Billy Cyrus, Jim Carrey, Brad Pitt. By the way, Brad and I had the same pastor at one time. Just so I throw that in. Honestly, he grew up in Springfield. You do know that, don't you? Springfield, yeah. I don't know what happened on all that. But anyway, Brooke Shields, Roseanne Barr, Drew Carey, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, and maybe you. And we're in good company. You know, that many times we don't talk too much about it because there's still a stigma there. It's come a long way. But people have diabetes. Some of you may have diabetes. Is all diabetes the same? No, it's so very different. But do you have any problem letting people know? I have diabetes. Some of you may take insulin. Some of you may not. But when it comes to depression, we don't much want to admit that we suffer any of that, do we? So there still remains a bit of a stigma that we work with. So even in church, we act like everything is all right, when deep inside we're dealing with and struggling with this issue. And not only that, biblically. For example, David in Psalm 42:10 says, "Why am I so depressed?" This is King David. Or Job, chapter 30, verse 16, says, "Depression haunts my days." Elijah, the great prophet, said, "I just want to die." Or then the Apostle Paul, and that's the one we're going to look at this morning because I think we learn a lot from these two verses. 2 Corinthians, chapter 7, verse 5 and 6. And I want us to look at the cause of depression in his life, and some of the things that can help us. So if you have a Bible, it'd be good just to have that open so you can circle some of these words and put big brackets around these verses. "For even when I came into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were afflicted on every side, conflicts without, fears within. But God, who comforts the depressed," he's talking about himself, "comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus." The first word to circle there is Macedonia. What was going on in Macedonia that he talked about the depression that that brought. Well, he had written a real sharp letter to the church at Corinth. And he sensed that he was totally being rejected since he had written that very sharp letter, and probably wished that like everything he could bring that letter back, but he could not. And now this group of people that he so dearly loved, he felt rejected by them, so much so he didn't know if he could ever go back. So he sent his associate, his close friend Titus, said, I want you to go back and check it out and see if they would even accept me or not. And then I'll meet you in Troas, and you can give me the report. Paul went to Troas, and his anxiety shot up even higher because Titus didn't show up. I don't know if something bad happened to Titus. I don't know if I've been rejected there, and he doesn't want to come and tell. I don't know what's going on. Not only that, the church in Macedonia was going through a real messy time. And he felt like everything was caving in on him. Have you ever felt like that? Everything is caving in on me. And that's how he felt. And it says here in Macedonia that my flesh, his body, his physically, had no rest. He had no rest because of this anxiety, because of this tugging on the inside. Felt like so overwhelmed, and it was all going down the tube. I had to learn to rest. As strange as that sounds, I did not in some ways know how to rest because I didn't understand that I was a four bucket guy, and so are you. There are four buckets of energy that we all have. And we need to know what drains us of those energies and what fills us back up, or we will not know how to, what Paul said, rest. So do you know how to rest? What are those buckets? Well, one is a physical bucket, and I think we understand that. So you understand when you're getting physically tired, do you not? And you know kind of what to do to fill it back up. But here's the question. Do you know when you're emotionally getting drained? Or even more importantly, how to fill the bucket back up? Do you know how to tell when you're mentally getting drained? Do you know the rest that will fill it back up? Do you know when you're getting spiritually depleted? Do you know the rest that will fill your spiritual cup back up? See, that was part of the learning curve that I had to get a hold of because I did not know what was going on inside of me that will drain out. So worse, you know, on my truck, when I get low on fuel, what happens? A light comes on, it honks at me, and I thought, boy, wouldn't it be great if I found my emotions and on my mind and all that, if it had some sort of gauge, it would say, Vernon, you're getting low, you're getting low, you're getting low. But I didn't. I had to learn that. And I had to become very sensitive, aware of the thinking patterns that were going on. So first of all, let's just talk about the mental bucket. What drains us mentally? I can take most any thought and turn it into a worry. Do you have that gift? Of taking thoughts and move them southward. And they become negative and depleting. And so I had a lot of thoughts going on inside of me that I did not know and was not aware of what was draining my bucket of my thinking. Then I began to be aware that a lot of it is just the thought of, I got to do this, I need to do this, I have to do this. Some of the other thinking is, you got to be perfect, you got to be perfect. Hurry up, hurry up. Be pleasing, be pleasing, be pleasing. My counselor would say, that's impossible. So I had to do some monitoring of the things that are going on in my head like that. And there's no switch to turn it off. So the only thing you can do is bring in some other thoughts by meditation. You know what meditation is? People get confused on that because a lot of meditation goes on around today is Eastern meditation, where you sit and you try to empty your head of everything. Well, for some of you, that's not a task at all, you know. Just kidding. You can't empty your head, but you try to. For a Christian, meditation is totally different. It is filling your mind. Filling your mind with things that God would say. And take verses. I would develop a verse a day that I would try to carry with me through the day. And just very simple verses, but a verse that I could just anchor in on. Some verses that would tell me how much God loves me. How much God is able. His capability, His power. And I just take a verse like that, I could meditate on that. Many times that's the way that I would have to start the day. Have you ever had real junky dreams and you wake up and sometimes they're a nightmare? And you say, oh man, what happened last night? And your mind is all squirrely in the morning time. It needs, not only do you need a physical shower, you need a mental shower. Because all kinds of junk got into your head. And meditation is better than Dial soap. To wash, to meditate, to fill your mind. So the first bucket is just one of our thinking and knowing when we're getting exhausted. But more importantly for me is I had no idea how to fill it back up, and that's what I had to learn. Or what about emotionally? I did not know one emotion is anger. I would never admit I was angry because I was taught a kid, don't ever get angry. I'm not angry, I'm just frustrated. That's anger. I'm hurt. That's anger. All of those kind of emotions there that sometimes we depress them. Grief is a deep, deep emotion. It's an emotion of losing something very precious, a great loss. That could be the loss of a loved one, but it could be loss of your health. It could be loss of a good friend. It could be loss of your finances. It could be the loss of a job. We go through all kinds of deep loss that we grieve over. And here again, I would not admit if I had any of those losses in my mind and in my life. And then I did not know how to fill it back up again. And so I had to learn. And the reason why this is so frustrating here is because I can't help you a whole lot. Because the thing that depletes my energy could be the very thing that fills your energy cup back up. And many times we marry people that are opposite us. So the things that may deplete me are the very things that would be energizing to Charlene. I'm an introvert. She's an extrovert. And so it's not that I don't like you. It's not that I don't want to be around you, but you wear me out real quickly. And I've got to have some rest. I got to take a break from you. But Charlene is energized by you and go on and on and on and on. Isn't that interesting how differently we're made? Unless we understand that and not run ourselves on a guilt trip. Do you know when you're getting depleted spiritually? Do you know how to fill that back up? You know, one thing that I think this will be kind of general for all of us is what will deplete you spiritually? Pride. What's pride do? Pride says, okay, God, I've got it handled today. The sun is shining. I feel good. And I don't need you now. In this prayer that we call the Lord's Prayer, he said, give us this week our daily bread. Is that what it says? Give us what? This day. Because it doesn't last till tomorrow. And spiritually we get depleted when we think, I don't need to go to the Lord's table to eat today. I don't need a quiet time. I don't need to feast on His Word. I don't need that because I'm doing all right. And then it catches up with you. So all of these buckets are different buckets that we have to know how to rest. And Paul was saying, I found in my flesh no rest. Then he goes on, and let's unpack another word, and it's afflicted. This word afflicted is interesting. It's pressure or stress, especially stress that lasts over a period of time and no rest from it. Charlie and I sometimes do an exercise with a video, and the one I find the most difficult is not all the aerobics, but when the person that's leading says, now hold it for 30 seconds. Man, that is excruciating. And then I'll say, you only have 15 more seconds to go. Come on, come on, come on. And I say, my muscles are saying, no, 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 no. That is stress. But it is that stress that gives me a wonderful body like I have today. Stress becomes de-stress, and that is toxic and dangerous. There is a healthy stress, afflicted. And he was afflicted because the pressure was on. The pressure that I had on me was mostly the pressure I put on myself. Vernon, you got to be perfect. You got to be pleasing. So I put a lot of pressure and stress on myself. Then the next word he talks about is conflicts without. Conflicts from the outside. He was in conflict with a church that he didn't know if they would ever accept him again. And it was, a horrifying time for him. The psalmist said one time in Psalm 42, he said, my adversaries taunt me, insult me. Some of you have suffered abuse. And that abuse, even when it was a child, you may have been sexually abused. You may have parents that were very abusive, even physically or verbally. And you don't forget that. I used to be real chubby, believe it or not. And when I was a kid, we never wear shoes, never wear a shirt in the summertime. And my aunt said one time, I still remember it, said, looks like we're going to have to buy you a bra. I never did like her very well. Do you notice I always wear my shirts on the outside still to this day? You don't forget things like that. But how do you process that and deal with it? So some of you have been abused. Bullying in school right now is a big issue. And it's not without effects. Damaging effects. And so that's what Paul was talking about, this conflicts without. And then fears within. He feared being a failure with the Corinthian church. He feared being failure in all that he was doing there and all the ministry that he had done there. And it looks like he's going to fail. And I felt like, many ways, I'm a failure at this church thing. I'm failing. Do you think that thought ever entered my mind when I started this work with Briarcliff? What if I fail? Fear of failure is one of the biggest fears that we deal with. Fear and I'll fail. So, what's the solution? Now that I've got you all cheered up with all that, what is the solution? Now look in verse 6. It turns the corner. But God. You have your Bible open. Circle those two words. But God. He is able. He is able if you trust Him. But God is able. He is able. How does that work? That God is able to trust Him. One verse is that verse became very meaningful to me is, take my yoke upon you. See, Jesus comes and said, let me lift the load for you, but I got to trust him. And I got to go the same direction he's going. Take my yoke upon you. I remember as a kid, I'd hang around the boat dock at Rockaway Beach. That was before Table Rock went in, and on Lake Tinicomo. And we had a good friend named Charlie, and he'd drive the speedboat. People would pay money, and they'd get in his speedboat, and he'd take them a ride to Branson and back to Rockaway. And one day, I remember, I'd not been in a speedboat before. All we had had was a fishing boat, and it wasn't all that fast. But anyway, got in there, and he said, come and go with us. And so I jumped in, and he took off. And wow, I mean, I'd never been anything like that. The boat reared up, couldn't see where we're going. And then he turned this way. All I saw was sky on that side, and all I saw was water on this side. And about the time, and then he'd flip over there, and everybody's just screaming and all that. And I was so petrified, I grabbed the jacket, sat down on the floor of the boat, and prayed, God, help us on all this. And then I looked at Charlie. He was having the time of his life. And then a thought struck me. Charlie knows what he's doing. I can trust Charlie. And the moment I trust Charlie, guess what happened to my fear? It turned into joy. Isn't that interesting? My fear turned into joy. God is able. When I look greater than looking at Charlie, look at God and trust him. I don't understand all this. You don't understand what's going on in your life right now and what you're going through. But God. And that's what Paul says. But God. What's the next word? Comforts. That word comfort is paraclete, which means come alongside. In other words, he wants to come alongside and share that with you. He wants to come alongside and help. He wants to be present right there with you. Now, be careful with this. This comforter does not always take away all the pain. Just because he comes alongside you, he does not necessarily take... you may and probably will never get rid of diabetes. You may never get rid of depression. But I'm not okay, but I'm doing okay. Do you understand? You learn how that, well, Paul had these words. This is toward the end of the book to 2 Corinthians. And this is in chapter 12. And you know, he had a thorn in the flesh. We don't know exactly what that was. But this thorn in the flesh, he prayed. How many times did he pray that God would relieve him of that? 3 times. Did God relieve him of that? Did the thorn go away? The diabetes go away? The depression? What happened? And he says this, chapter 12, verse 9, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So I opened up my shirt, and all of a sudden I realized the Superman S on my t-shirt was gone. I'm not Superman. And I still have, I've learned, and I know kind of the signs. I have learned. Back up a little bit. Your tank emotionally, mentally, spiritually is getting low. And if you don't get the rest to fill that back up, depression will get you. See, I've learned that, but I learned it the hard way, a year-long education. But, so you have diabetes. So you have high blood pressure. I've had depression. So what's your problem? All of us deal with something in our life, but God. You know, during those days, and I found that the Psalms becomes very comforting. I've done, of course, a number of funerals, and there'll be times that I'll ask I said, could I see that the person is deceased? Could I see their Bible? I remember the first time I did that, there was a woman that had died a lingering death of cancer. And I read her Bible. I asked if I'd take it to the funeral and read from it. She had all kinds of verses marked in Psalms because that was her comfort. God was with her. It strengthened her. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. All kinds of verses there that I would focus on. But then one last thing in this. Not only, but God can comfort. The word Titus, circle the word Titus there. What's the significance of Titus? Well, Titus was a close friend. And he found a tremendous amount of comfort in this friend. And so it says here that who comforts me in that depression comforted us by the coming, by the coming of Titus. Titus finally showed up. And not only that, my good friend showed up and he told me everything is all right, that I'm welcome back in Corinth. And there was something about Titus. So the question is who's your Titus? Who is it that at least somewhat understands what you're going through? They'll never totally understand it. In fact, you may not totally understand it now. But who is it that could be your Titus? I felt so sorry for a man that came at the close of service last hour, just sobbing. I'd done his wife's funeral, it's been some time ago. And he said, I lost my Titus. Now, how do you find a Titus? Because we know, and this is research, David Smith, let me just read to you what he says. For we can tolerate stress and live lives more fully when at least one other person understands our struggle. So who is that Titus in your life? This is two independent studies that I read. One was from the University of California and the other was from the University of Michigan. And they came up with the same conclusion from that study that one of them was a 9-year-long study, is that if you don't have or you don't belong to a nurturing group or have those kind of relationships, then the death rate is twice as high. What's the essence of that? Get in a small group or die early. How's that for most of you? That'd be a good tagline for small groups, wouldn't it? That'd be a good place to start. Maybe there would be a Titus in there that you could begin to understand and draw from. So let's wrap this up with the three A's. Three A's that you could do. Here's steps that... Next steps for one, the first step is awareness. Are you aware of what's going on inside your soul? That is spiritually, mentally, emotionally. Are you aware of two things? Are you aware of what drains you? And even more importantly, I think, are you aware of how to fill that bucket back up? That's called rest. Are you aware? Are you aware of how to do that? The second one is more difficult. And it's admit that you need help. If I had diabetes, I would have no trouble going to get help and tell everybody what I had. But I all of a sudden discovered I was dealing with depression. I didn't want anybody to know it. Not anybody. So I just told the people at church, I've got a virus. You know, if you don't know what it is, you just call it a virus. And that's what I did. Because I didn't want to admit. And it's hard for me to admit that I need a counselor, and even more difficult for me to admit, and this is sort of debatable, I know it is, but it's even more difficult for me to admit I need medication. And I did. It's not easy to admit. So what was the first A? Awareness. Second one is What do you think the third one might be? Acknowledge the love of God. Acknowledge God is able. Look at Charlie. And let him take away your fear. Look at God and let him turn the fear into joy. Now, where are you today? Do you know? Some of you know that there's something wrong on the inside of your soul. You just don't know how to express it. Are you aware of, you know, I always wish in my truck, am I getting low on fuel? You know what it does, don't you? A light comes on and it talks to me and all that. I often wondered, wish on my buckets that had a gauge on them. Vernon, you're getting low, you're getting low. You know how many times I hit the wall before I'd ever, oh, okay. I've hit the wall a lot of times. But I'm learning. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like for you in a moment to stand with your heads bowed, eyes closed, don't look around. And I want you to listen to a song that our team will sing. You know it. You've heard it a lot. Come out of sadness from wherever you are or wherever you've been. Come brokenhearted. Let rescue begin. Come find your mercy, O sinner. Come kneel. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't heal. So lay down your burdens. Lay down your shame. All who are broken, lift up your face. O wonder, come home. You're not too far. So lay down your hurt. Lay down your heart. Come as you are. They're going to sing that in a moment. And I want you, maybe right where you are, say, God, I don't know exactly all what's going on inside of me. I'm not even sure I can tell you where I am spiritually. As I look at those buckets, I don't know how low or how full I am there. And you may just say, I just need to lay this all down to you.